Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Mike O'Mara Show. This is one of our holiday extras. We told you we'd have content all throughout the holiday season for you, and this is certainly the most recent one. Rob Spiewak here with not Josh Sroka, immediately anyway, but his brother Matt Sroka. And I don't know if you heard on a previous episode, Matt has a chilling story to tell of thrills and intrigue and mistaken identity. No missing jewels or drugs or anything, but you certainly teased it on the show this week. So we are joined today by Matt Sroka. So Gary Krimble and Happy Rudolph. And Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here. I teased it, so now I have to.
You got to make good on it. You do.
Yeah. However successful or unsuccessful that the tease was, I still have to go through with it.
I think it's not really a harbinger of doom. Some movies are marketed poorly and end up doing very, very well.
Yeah. Well, if I can just briefly defend my tease, even if you didn't hear the tease, but...
You're allowed to pause and go back if you like, ladies and gentlemen, to hear this tease. It's something.
But sometimes, and Rob, you know this, right? Sometimes something sounds really nice in your head, it makes sense in your head, and then after you say the thing, it's like, oh...
Are you kidding? I've built a career on that, Matt. I mean, really, I mean, 2 for 10 would be great if I could pull that off. But no, I totally get it. And also, you were playing an away game. It's not your show. It's not Section 336. Wow. It's a different arena. You don't always know what you're playing against.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And you do this every day. I don't do this every day. But the whole thing I was getting at is my getting lost in Africa is kind of interesting, but all like the other people that were affected by it. And then after you kind of, because I was found, I'm here. And then after you get found.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, I was just going to start at the end. I was found.
Just like Pulp Fiction or Citizen Kane. All great stories are very circular. Yeah.
You talk to people and you find out kind of, while I was lost, all the other things that were happening to other people. I mean, the first person to know kind of stateside that I was missing were random people in Louisiana, because one of my friends called a radio show down there to ask for prayer for me because they couldn't find me. And that was the first people to ever even know in America that I was lost, was this random listeners to this Christian radio station in Louisiana. And then you have the other friends and what happened to them.
You know, it's funny when you talk about Louisiana radio, you're already not in one of the top 10 markets. And then you add in Christian radio in Louisiana. I mean, you might as well open a window and yell out. Okay, before we get started in your story, let's lay some groundwork. Now, you are brothers with our producer, Josh. And I should know this because legendarily people know we're friends. Who's older, you or Josh?
Josh is older.
By how many years?
He's got 4 years on me.
Wow. Okay. So he looks so much younger than you.
Okay. Rude.
No, just different looks. Actually, poor Josh is not broadcasting under the greatest of conditions this morning. So I'm just including him so he feels loved. Yeah. So you are, but I would say 4 is, especially when you're growing up, that's a long way away from each other. That's a whole high school career. Like when you went to high school, did they say you're Josh's little brother?
No, but I had a sister in between there. So okay. I had a sister's 2 years older. So it was more I was Lara's
little brother.
Yeah, little brother. Yeah, the 4 years interesting because, he graduated and then I went into high school. So we never crossed paths in high school.
I can dig it. My kids are 21 months apart. So closer and, I tend to lump them together chronologically. But 4 years growing up is huge. Might not seem so much now. So when you were growing up, this starts with what, missionary work that it began?
Yeah, I guess so. The whole idea was, and I had never, I did some church short-term, one-week stuff, but this was a very different kind of ball game. Mm-hmm. And when I was teaching, when I was a student at Liberty University, a guy came in and talked about the work they were doing in Tanzania. I had never left the country before. It never really entered my mind to do this.
And but Tanzania, then, we know it's in Africa. Where in Africa is it?
Yeah, East Africa.
Okay.
So kind of right below Kenya, over in East Africa. And so When I heard him talk about it, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. It's really cool. You guys are doing that work. And kind of filed in the back of my mind, this is maybe my sophomore, junior year.
Right.
And then when I got ready to graduate my senior year, I got a little nervous about graduating, you know, because so then you'd have to get the
this
job.
Is senior year of college. What year is this?
This is 2000. I guess it'd be this 2007.
Okay, so let's put ourselves in the sort of the mental framework here. I think that is the end of the George W. Bush administration in 2007. Just so we're historically thinking right, internet not a thing yet, cell phones not common yet. I guess, you know, this is, I bet it doesn't seem like 18 years ago to you.
Yeah, I mean, cell phones definitely not, I mean, cell phones
as
are
prevalent.
Thing,
yeah.
But not, they're not as prevalent. The, I think Facebook came out my junior year or something. So it's right around the time that Facebook came
back
out.
Back then it was called the Facebook.
Yes.
Yeah. And for people that are listening to this, this is when... That rare, brief moment of time when the Mike O'Mara Show was on broadcast radio. This was after the Don and Mike Show, but before the podcast. So just so we get ourselves mentally placed, and you are a good-looking man of what, 21, 22?
Yeah, I'm 23 at the time now. So yeah,
okay.
I'm 23. I finished my fall semester. So this is like January 2007.
Okay.
All I have to do is student teach and then I graduate. And then I get some cold feet about student teaching because I'm afraid of starting my life. You know, I want more adventure, the wife, the house, the picket fence, 2.5 kids, the dog. I'm not ready for all that.
I got you. I started, I was married at 25. I couldn't wait to just ruin my life. I think 2 weeks after I graduated, I was working on the Don and Mike Show. So there was no thought of gap year or vacation or anything. It just started. Yeah. But you were probably a little, you were showing a little wisdom. There's no hurry to get started in your life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did come right back and get married and do all this stuff. But I did have this kind of brief break in time to do this adventure, and it became a little bit more adventurous, to be honest, than I was.
Okay.
than
you
I was
bit off
for.
More than you expected to chew.
Yeah, I remember making the phone call to my parents. My parents it was out of the blue. I never left the country before. I said, "Hey, I'm gonna take a semester off, 6 months, and go to Tanzania and just teach there for 6 months." They're like, what?
my kids are about that age now. Were I to get that phone call, I was shocked enough when Robert said, I'm going to Pittsburgh this weekend. You know, that's like a big enough deal to me. So you had to like get a passport, I imagine, not being a world traveler. You had to go through all the hoops to make this happen.
There's some shots and vaccinations involved.
Oh, yeah. It's hideous. Yeah. Does.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So you go through and there's a ton of paperwork and everything. And so, but whatever, I sign up and I kind of out of the blue do it. I don't know anyone else involved in the organization. I don't know anyone else who's going. And I just kind of hop on a plane.
Were you not like recruited or did you just hear about it secondhand and you decided I wanted to do this?
Well, again, it was like sophomore, junior year, someone from this organization called Village Schools International came and talked to one of my education classes. I filed that in the back of my mind. And then when I was looking for things to do, because I didn't want to teach, I thought back about them. I looked up their website, very sparse because this organization was just starting out. I just reached out to them.
A beautiful 16-bit website.
Yeah, it was villageschools.org is a website. They've gotten a lot better. But it was just kind of happen chance. And I could have been anywhere, to be honest. It was just
okay.
That's the one
All
I remembered.
Right.
And so that's the one I decided to go with.
Right.
And I just kind of left and went.
And then, so you hop a plane. I'm hoping it's like a regular plane, not like a cargo plane or anything. You're not
sharing it
with cows and moose or anything, right?
No, I don't remember the airline. This is a legit airline, though. I think.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
It was a horrible flight, it was probably United. I'm just guessing.
No, it was weird. I mean, I think for this first, I mean, I've been several times. So I think this first trip we flew to London, and then from London we flew to Turkey, then Turkey to Tanzania.
Okay.
So a couple stops, but not a bad flight experience.
Okay, just
but
question,
again,
because
yeah.
You know, I'm fascinated by international travel. When you land in Heathrow, do you have any time to like stay and see the city, or are you just locked in the airport and then you catch your next flight? Did you have a layover of any sort?
On this first time, there were no layovers, no extended layovers.
Okay.
There's been other times where I have been able to check out
London. Okay, cool. And then when you go from, I mean, London is just like America, except they talk funny. And then you go to Turkey. Was Turkey any sort of culture shock when you landed in the airport? It had to feel different.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. And again, for someone who's never left the country before, even just being surrounded by people who are different than me, and then the signs, right, are all different.
Maybe
even
like
figuring out the bathroom
thing.
Situation, like all that is, it's something to navigate, especially if you never, if you're not used to traveling like that.
I took some French, so I was okay when I went to France, but Germany, it can be frightening, not just because they're German, because, you know, they've got a history, but also all the, you're right, the signs, it's very disconcerting when you can't read and figure out where you are. All right, I'm sorry. I just wanted to derail you there.
It's true, and everyone around you kind of speaking a different language, trying to navigate that and making sure you don't get lost or making sure you're in the right spot, it can be tricky. And so,
Okay, so you land in Turkey, and then it's off from Turkey to Tanzania, or as some people may say, Tanzania.
Yes, some people do say Tanzania.
I'm actually scared that I'm going to say it today, so I'm concentrating as best I can.
I think both are acceptable and fine.
Okay, well, let's go with Tanzania. I think it sounds wiser.
Yeah. so you land in Dar es Salaam, which is, you know, a really nice, developed, nice city.
Okay.
I think I was in Dar for maybe...
Oh, you call it Dar?
Yeah, Dar for short. I see. You know, me and Dar go back.
Oh, sure. And you know the town now.
Yeah. but I was just there. We just slept there. So we got a hotel there, slept there, and then the next day we were off. So there was no hanging out, seeing the city. And the organization I was with, they're kind of no nonsense. Like, you are there to work. You're there to teach. You're
I'm the same way.
As a tourist, let's go get to work.
Now, if you had some time in Dar, what are the sights to see? What would you do at that time, had you known? What would you see in Dar? What is there to see? You said tourist stuff. Anything?
Yeah, there's several nice museums there. The downtown area is nice to walk around in. There's a lot of history in terms of, there's a lot of interesting stuff about the history of their democracy, because they're fairly new democracy. Okay. You can also learn about the different tribes.
Is that the capital? I hate to sound as naive as I am, but is that the capital of Dar? Is Dar the capital of Tanzania?
Yeah, it gets a little bit tricky because they've been trying for years to move the capital to Dodoma, because it's more centrally located. So now people call the governmental capital Dodoma, but in terms of industry, it's more Dar es Salaam.
I understand. Okay.
So kind of like two capitals. There's also Zanzibar is a short boat ride off of Dar.
Great Billy Joel song.
Okay.
Zanzibar. Check it out. You'll probably know it when you hear it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So you're off with this no nonsense organization. You're off to your next destination. How are you traveling from Dar? Is it by bus? Is it a crowded bus? Tell us how you live.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's no nonsense. They're not getting a special car for us or anything. We're traveling kind of mass transit in these buses. Again, I think I'm the only, there might be a couple Americans who were with me initially, but for the most part, we're traveling on these kind of big buses that go across the country. It's about a 12-hour bus ride to the city we need to get to.
Like flying into Miami when your destination is D.C.
Yeah, it's insane.
that's crazy.
It's a different part of the country. And then and then from there, you get on a little bus to take another two-hour ride.
Short bus?
Yeah.
I understand.
To the school where I was going to teach at.
Okay, what's the name of the school, or does it have a name?
It's my D.C. secondary school.
Okay, very cool. So what grade? 7th, 8th, or the equivalent of 7th and 8th in the United States?
Around? Yeah, it ran through. When I was there, when I was there, they just had 7th and 8th.
Okay.
But now they have 7th through 12th.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah. But they call it Form 1 and Form 2 and Form 3 and Form 4, but same idea.
We'll talk about that next Christmas.
They're in the British system over there,
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Oh, no argument from me, Rob.
You know, we are nationalists, pure and true. All right, so you get to your town and you get to your secondary school.
Yeah. So, and there, and I'm so glad I ran into Village Schools International, and they've done amazing work. I was just, you know, fortunate that this is the organization I choose to go with, because they're doing really neat stuff. They've started over 90 schools in the past 20 years, and my relationship with them, has extended beyond that. So this is my first time going. I still support them, and I go, you know, I've gone now 4 times to Tanzania with the same organization.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned that when you left, you were sort of in a not a career standstill, but at least at a crossroads. You didn't know exactly what you wanted to do because you were about to graduate college and you didn't sure if you were ready to adult yet. When you make and this is more of an end of the interview question, but I wanted to ask this now.
Yeah, because we got to get lost, Rob. I haven't gotten lost yet.
This is all act one, Matt. So you get there and, you know, you're not lost, but you're at a crossroads, certainly. And you see all of this going on. Did this inspire you to become the Dr. Matt Sroka that you are today? Did this help solidify the fact that you wanted to teach?
Maybe. I mean, it was something where I knew I wanted to do something that made a difference in people's lives.
Understood.
And so this helps solidify that, yes, like teaching is an avenue where you can make a real profound difference. But it's also, I mean, you remember life at 23. It was also like there was a lot going in my head in terms of like, what do I want to do like once I graduate?
Exactly.
I had a girlfriend, a serious girlfriend at the time. Like, do I want to marry her? Like, there's mm-hmm. like it's kind of a key time,
right?
The time of graduation. And so there's other thoughts. Yeah, this was certainly because when I was there, I was kind of away. You're just away from everything, right? You're away from kind of all the norms. There is no technology there at all. There's a lot of downtime to think.
I would think it's almost like starting from square one. Because it's almost like a reset in your life when you land in a place that you are an outsider and you don't know what you're doing and you've never been out of the country. Okay, but you're never miserable, right? I mean, it's nice. It's just different.
Yeah, I mean, there were times when I was kind of counting down the days at the end of going home because it was hard. I mean, I was living in a Tanzanian teacher house. There was seven of us in this one room that's part of this house. So it was kind of intense living. And
was it or was it not the inspiration for the sitcom Friends? I understand that it was loosely adapted from your lifestyle over there.
The food was ugali and beans or rice and beans kind of monotonously every day. So like there were some things that
Is the rice and beans that you had over there as good as the rice and beans that you put in the cookbook?
Oh, man. And that was my inspiration for the cookbook.
The TMOS Family Cookbook has your rice and beans at 14 cents a serving?
Yes, and my inspiration for that, and I became hooked on rice and beans after living in Tanzania. So yeah, that recipe definitely is inspired from my time.
Awesome. Okay, very cool. So the food is not as zesty as perhaps you would hope, but at least it's reliable.
Yes, I'm well fed. I'm never wanting for food there. And so, yeah, and so I live 6 months there with Tanzanians. I'm teaching. There's really no, I mean, and it's so hard to get anywhere anyway. It's not like I can't go on trips anywhere because it's just too hard to get anywhere.
Understood.
So I'm staying there and I live there and I stay there for 6 months. And then after that, we go back, but on the way back, they're kind enough to say, hey, on the way back, choose one touristy thing to do before you go home. Right. So do one touristy thing.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is where the getting lost part comes in with the touristy thing.
Okay.
If I just would have stayed working, Rob, none of this would have ever happened.
This is a lesson for all the kids who are listening. Focus, nose to the grindstone,
and you too
will never be lost in Africa. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll get to the crux of this story. I'm joined by Matt Sroka. This is the Mike O'Mara Show, and he is lost in Africa. And we are back. He's about to do something touristy. I want to do a classic radio reset, but I don't have to because most people don't jump into a podcast 18 minutes into it. So we'll just continue from where you left your village. Is that okay to call it a village?
Yeah.
Okay, you left your village and you were going to do something touristy on your way back to Dar, right?
Yeah, well, we went all the way back to Dar. Uh-huh. And then while in Dar, there is this touristy area called the Slipway.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommended, very nice area. And on the slipway, they have this, you have the opportunity to take a boat and go on a trip to an island off the coast of Dar, an uninhabited island called Bungoyo Island.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend the day out on Bungoyo Island. They catch fresh fish for you or crab for you. You eat right there on the island. You're there for the day. And then in the evening, the boat comes back and you come back.
How did you hear about this very touristy sounding experience? Because mightn't you have just stuck to the museums? You could have been a lot safer if you didn't hop on some sort of boat. Did you hear about it from somebody? Did you read about it? And did it come with any sort of warning?
No. The organization I went with, Village Schools International, I was talking to, you know, Steve Vinton, and he is kind of in charge, and or he at least is kind of the missionary in charge. There's mm-hmm. Tanzanians who actually run the organization, but he recommended a couple spots.
Okay, so you didn't just jump into
one of the recommendations.
You didn't jump into this blindfolded. You knew what you were expecting. Okay, that's cool. Well, it sounds beautiful. I mean,
it's
actually
beautiful and not dangerous if you're not a knucklehead. So it was
ladies and gentlemen, is known as the knucklehead disclaimer.
Yeah, and it was very. It sounds touristy, and if you go now, because I went kind of back years later, it is very touristy. But at the time, it was not known very well. In 2007, it was not as popular.
That's cool. That sounds actually amazing. It really does. As long as you know that you're not going to be, you know, murdered, it sounds great. So you decide to do that. Do you have to pay for it? How much was it? Was it expensive?
No, nothing's expensive. I think it was like maybe $40 or something.
Okay, cool. For I can eat that much of crab. Easy. Yeah.
And so I was there, and I was with two other people who were with the same organization. They were teaching in different villages than I was, but we were all flying out together. So we kind of joined up in Dar to fly out together, and we did this whole thing together. And so it was Leslie and Michael and myself. We got on a small boat, and then there was only four other people. They were, I don't want to stereotype here. I think they were German or Swedish women. They were very large, blonde hair women. A little bit intimidating, actually, to be on the boat with
them.
Were
they also carrying two mugs of beer and huge pretzels? I mean, we're not going to stereotype, are we?
I'll stop there. Okay. I won't say anything about the science.
Okay,
of the
pretzels. So there's seven people.
So there's seven of us. That's it.
How big is this boat? Could it have accommodated more people?
Yeah, maybe up to like 15 or 20.
Okay, so it's not full at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
But talking to them, this is kind of typical. They'll have like, I don't know, 7 to 10 people, and that's kind of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just us on this island. So we take this boat, I don't know, like a 40-minute boat ride. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not moving very fast.
3-hour tour.
Yeah. To this uninhabited island. And you get there, and it's nice. They have these beautiful, pristine beaches, clear water.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
The island is also kind of, it's wooded. So there's woods, forests to explore. Mm-hmm. And the forest, and this is where the trouble comes, the forest and the woods were just, it was calling me, Rob. It was calling me.
I understand.
Here's one last adventure before, I mean, the next day my flight left at 8 a.m. to go back to America. And so like, this is my last day in Tanzania. Yeah. This is my adventure.
And besides, what happens in the Dar Island stays on the Dar Island.
There you go.
You go crazy. I mean, there's German women. Look out. Look out. Watch out.
Well,
I'm kidding. All right. So the woods are calling you. Now, are the trees, they're not like, are they palm trees because it's warm? Is it like American oaks and maples? What is the forest like? Because I'm picturing like a jungle, and I'm sure that's not right.
Well, I don't know my tree types here, Rob. I'm going to disappoint you here.
Quite all right.
It's like a thick forest.
Okay. All right.
So it is not like the sporadic palms. It is like a thick forest.
Okay. Understood.
And so and people can look up pictures of Bungoyo Island. Just type in Bungoyo Island, it'll pop up.
I was doing that last week. What a coincidence.
Yeah, interesting. And well, listen to my story before you go, Rob.
Okay.
And so I started to kind of, you know, and I left my friends and everyone else decided just to stay on the beach and enjoy the beach and swim. That's smart.
Idiots with your fresh water and you're swimming.
I said, no, thanks, guys. I'm going to go explore. Anyone come with me? Like, no, Matt. We're just going to stay on the beach.
Nine. Was not to stay on the beach.
So everyone else stays on the beach. I'm a knucklehead for a lot of reasons. But here, I leave my shoes, my bag, my passport, all on the beach.
Oh, okay.
And I go take, and by the way, boys and girls, if you ever travel, don't leave your passport ever, no matter where you go.
No, tape it to your leg. Yeah. It's really quite important.
Yeah. And so I start walking through the island, and it's kind of cool. There are some kind of paths that you can kind of navigate a little bit. And so I'm kind of enjoying the walk. And then I kind of curve out eventually, and it goes to the beach again. And so now I'm kind of walking around the edge of the island, and I'm seeing all kinds of cool stuff. Starfish, eels.
Wild. That's cool.
It's just tropical fish. It's just really cool. And I continue to walk around. And my plan is, like, I've walked deep enough into the forest and then out into the edge. My plan is to walk along the beach and kind of walk around the island and get back to where my friends are, the main part of the beach.
Okay, so this island that is out there with the forest, if you just look at the perimeter of the island, it is navigable. It's not a huge, you're not on Greenland here. I mean, you can, you could walk probably the circumference of the island in a couple hours. Is it that big or how is it?
Rob, that's that was my understanding.
Ah, okay. Forgive me for reading ahead.
But the reality was different.
Okay, what? Well, let's focus on reality.
And so I start walking around thinking that, yes, like within an hour or so, I walked an hour in maybe or so. So
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. Eventually, I'll get back to my friends here.
As a rule, how is your sense of direction?
Not good, Rob. Not good. And
see,
I have
my wife
long...
has the worst sense of direction ever, and she has a college degree in cartography. So don't feel bad.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So don't feel bad, but I would be thinking if I had a limited sense of direction, which I do, I'd even wonder if I'm walking the right direction when I got to the beach.
No, you're absolutely right. And I wasn't thinking that, Rob, because all I was thinking was, this is awesome. This is an adventure.
Sure.
And this island's not that big. So even if I'm walking the wrong way, I'll eventually make it back around to my friends either way.
The beltway theory. I mean, you can shorten the trip or you can lengthen it, but you're going to get there either way.
Yeah, but then something starts to happen, Rob. It changes everything. I'm walking on the beach. And then, you know, there's water. There's the ocean right there.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of...
right next to me.
That's what happens on a beach.
Yeah. And then I notice, Rob, that all of a sudden that water that was a few feet away is now at my ankles. And now, before I know it, it's at my knees.
Oh, the tide's coming in, yes.
Tide's coming in, Rob. And something's changed with the island, too, where it's no longer beach. It's like these jaggedy cliffs.
Oh,
then the island.
So not just... the tide changing, but the topography changing as well.
Absolutely. And so I can't, at this point, just get back on the island because these, you know, large 10-foot cliffs are in the way.
Is this the first nod of something might be wrong in your head when things are changing like that? Or did you have any misgivings leading up to that?
No, this is the first time.
Okay. All right. And I understand.
What goes through my mind is, okay, I have two options. I can keep on walking this way and make it back to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can turn around and go back to where that beach part was.
Double back.
Yeah. But in my mind, I'm thinking, I can't. I have to be close.
Also, if you turn around and not face the rising tide and the jagged rocks and certain death, you are also undoing all the progress you've made.
Yes, okay, exactly.
So you've got an internal fight going on there, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so this is my debate happening, and I kind of debate this for a while. And then finally, I just, you know what? I'm just going to keep on going. And then I pick up, but at this point, I'm concerned, so I start picking up the pace. I'm walking with purpose, Rob.
I understand. You're no longer lollygagging. Yeah.
No, I'm not looking at starfish anymore. I don't care about the stupid starfish. I'm trying to get
back
to my
friends. Yeah, I understand. You're motivated.
But I can't describe to you, Rob, how, and I don't know, I haven't looked up the math on this.
Right.
But how fast this tide rises is unbelievable.
I've seen, especially when you are on an isolated landmass like that. There is there's an island off of the eastern shore of Virginia called Cedar Island. And I was on that one day and we basically blinked and our boat was grounded. That's how fast the tide went out. And it just, especially on a landmass like that that's isolated, you feel it. It is fast and there's no way to fight it.
Yeah. So before I know it, Rob, the water is over my head and I am swimming with no way to get back on the island.
So you can't even like get to the jagged rocks at this point.
And in fact, I have to swim away from the jagged rocks because the waves are crashing into the jagged rocks, thus crashing me into the jagged rocks and scraping me up.
I know the word they always use in the papers is he was dashed against the rocks. You don't want to be dashed against the rocks.
Yeah, it's not fun to be dashed against the rocks.
No, no one likes dashing.
No. and to make matters worse, because I was dashed several times,
yes.
And not just against the wall, but to the bottom of the ocean floor, and it's full of these black sea urchins.
Yes. Oh.
And so many of them got stuck in my feet, and days later, I was pulling these sea urchins out of my feet.
Wow. Okay.
Very painful.
Right. Okay. So when you're swimming, are you swimming forward or swimming back the way you came, or do you have any control?
No, I press on. I'm swimming
attaboy
forward.
Makes me very proud.
Yeah. I swim on, and I keep on thinking, because you know there's like curves in the island. I keep on thinking the next curve I go
around the corner,
I'm going to find my friend.
Yes.
And then I, you know, and this is the point where I think as I'm swimming, it's, I don't know how long, it's been a long time swimming.
Right.
And I'm a decent swimmer, but not a great swimmer. And I think, and this is where I start to think, like, this is it.
Yeah.
And I think, and my thought is, like, this is really an embarrassing way to die.
Well, I mean, that is an embarrassing way to die and so inconvenient. But also, you would talk about swimming. The ocean, it's a whole different thing, too, because you're fighting the tide the whole time. So you've got to be exhausted, too.
Yeah, absolutely exhausted. Uh-huh. I'm fighting the tide. I'm fighting wanting to stay close to the island, but not so close that it kind of tauts. So it's like I'm also trying to swim forward to make progress, but I'm making so little progress with my swimming. And so, I think about, you know, you think about everything. You think about, oh, man, I'm leaving my parents, my girlfriend.
Right.
I'm leaving all this behind. This
I'll is never really hear the Mike O'Mara show.
Yeah. I'll never even get to meet my good friend, Rob. That's what I'm thinking about in these last moments.
Yeah.
And then, I just kind of, you got to keep on going. And then finally, I see, I go around a nook or go around a little, you know, curve in the island.
Yeah.
And there is a little nook into the island that has a raised up part.
Excellent.
That I can get to.
Right.
That has not been fully covered with water yet. And so I get to this raised up part. And then from this raised up part, I'm able to climb up this cliff and get back onto the island. So I climb, I get back to the island.
So at least you're on land. Now let me ask a question. Yeah. And for people that are just listening to this, you are a gentleman, as I am, that wears glasses. At this point, 15, 13, oh, I guess 18 years ago, did you need your glasses? Was vision hampering you when you were trying to find your way around the island, or were you okay? Because obviously you couldn't be swimming with your glasses on.
Oh, that's a great question, Rob. No, this is, for me, this is pre-glasses. So
okay.
I think, well, I got glasses like the year late, year after this.
Thank goodness for that, because that could really be like a Velma Dinkley Scooby-Doo situation, that not only are you going to lose your life, but you can't see anything.
Well, I had a similar moment where I had my friend Michael, who I was with, I borrowed his camera to take pictures as I walked around the island. And then I was swimming, kind of trying. And then I was also like holding his camera up. And you have this moment, this realization, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm literally swimming for my life. And I care so much about my friend's camera. Like, what? Who cares
you
about
are
this stupid
the
camera?
Most, you are the most thoughtful castaway in
Yeah,
town.
Exactly. I'm going to die with my hand up out of the water, holding, trying
the
to protect his camera.
But the pictures were beautiful.
So anyway, the camera didn't survive.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Sorry.
So you're on the nook.
Yeah, so I made it to the nook, I climbed up, and I kind of like passed out there because I'm absolutely exhausted.
I can only imagine. Horrible.
And then I don't know how long I kind of lay there for. And then I get up and I'm like, oh, I got to get back, you know, because now I see that the sun is starting to go down.
Yeah.
And that boat left, you know, I think it was like 4 or 5 o'clock. The boat was going to leave to go back to Dar.
Gosh. So you are putting together in your head now, if the sun is down, you've missed your deadline.
Well, I think I still have time.
Okay. All right. Okay, good.
But this island is made up of kind of this like dried lava bed. Like it's that jagged rock, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And you left your shoes at the camp.
And I have sea urchins in my feet.
That's right. But other than that.
Other than that, everything's fine. So it was excruciating to walk. So I'm like half walking, half crawling. And the brush and just the thorns and everything, you know, it's just so thick, Rob.
Right.
I can't get through. There's no path through. And so and it's hard for me to walk. And so I try a couple different ways. And then I just can't get through. And then I see the sun
have you
go
gotten
down.
To the, have, sun is going down. Have you gotten to the point yet where you're yelling help? Have you yelled anything?
Oh, no. At this point, I'm actually not yelling.
Okay. All right. Just checking. I want to gauge where you are.
Yeah. Maybe I should have yelled. But I realize there's... this whole thing could have been avoided if I just yelled.
I'm so sorry I've turned this into a problem.
And so, you know, I can't get back through. And so then I come back to where I climbed up, and I see the sun starting to set. So I think, you know what? My friends, you know, and there was only 7 of us. They're going to realize one person's missing.
Exactly, yeah.
They'll send a boat around the island.
They'll
hop
find
on the
you.
Boat.
They've got to find you.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you this is not the first time this has happened with this sketchy, sus tourism company.
Okay. It was, Rob. And
oh no!
When I went back to visit years later, they still talk about me as the boy who got lost. I'm kind of famous there for being
horrifying.
The boy who got lost.
That's very.
They said they had to set up a bunch of signs just for me, so to cover themselves. You know, whatever.
Well, I hope they were in all languages.
Yeah. So I wait for the boat to come, and the sun goes down, and
does
the boat never arrives.
Is it cold because the sun is down now?
Yeah, it's cold. It's so loud because really? The waves are crashing right next to me.
Right on.
I'm still wet from my swim, so I'm shivering.
And the camera's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And but so no boat comes.
Oh God.
And then, you know, I'm sitting out there. I can't sleep. I can't lay down anywhere. It's just miserable. And it is. It's like something out of the cartoons, Rob. You look in the forest.
Yeah.
You see like the little red and yellow
eyes
staring back at you. God, I mean, I saw eyes, Rob. Then every now and then I would feel something run across my legs, like an island rat or something, I'm guessing.
Mm.
So what I found myself doing to comfort myself and scare away the island rats is I was like singing Christian praise songs at the top of my lungs. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of Amazing Grace was happening on Bungoro Island.
That will definitely keep away the Jewish rats.
Yeah. Well, but it kept away all the rats. I guess they didn't like the sound of my voice.
Are you a good singer as a rule?
No.
I wouldn't call on you to be a good singer in this situation, but like, can you carry a tune?
No, there are no situations where I can carry a tune.
Okay, so you're just making noise.
I'm just making noise. In what I call singing, but it's effective. It kind of keeps sailing away.
Okay.
And I do have one moment where you realize, oh, I really kind of messed all this up, and I bet everyone at home is freaking out, and I felt really badly about the whole thing.
Okay.
And then you just sit there and you wait. And then I was, the whole night, I'm thinking too, my flight left, you know, the next day at 8 a.m.
Oh, God, that's right.
I want to make this flight.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking the second the sun rises, you know, I don't care how much my feet hurt. I don't care how thick that brush is. I'm getting off this island.
Exactly. I mean, you've got all those sea urchins eating you alive, and all you're thinking is, I should have bought travel insurance.
Absolutely. And then, I had travel insurance, all right? It didn't help.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. And so I wait for the sun to rise. The sun rises. I start taking off back to the island. Again, though, I get like 15, 20 feet in. I just can't go any further. Like, it's just so thick.
So miserable.
I just can't make it through.
Hey, look who's here.
Hey, I am here. Just hanging out. Matt, is this a good time to share that this is when everyone gets notified in the States?
Yeah, so I guess, this is where you're asleep. Yeah, while I'm sitting there feeling bad about all this, phone calls are being made. So the ambassador from America, Tanzania is notified that there is an American missing in Tanzania. They call. I don't know exactly how and maybe you, Josh, know better how the phone calls. I know Emily was driving home.
First to get notified.
Yeah.
Who was your girlfriend at the time?
Yes.
Now wife. And then.
Oh, you see, I was going to ask, whatever happened to the girlfriend? Now we know you married her. That's great. Congratulations. Yeah.
And then I don't know if our parents got notified or if I think Emily got a voicemail.
Yeah, because she was driving home.
Because she was driving. And you know, this is back hands-free, no internet.
What a voicemail to get.
Communication with Matt his entire time over there was pretty much impossible.
Yeah, I was going to say dicey at best.
I think I made like maybe two phone calls in 6 months.
Yeah. And one of them was to win REO Speedwagon tickets.
I would record Raven games, mail him the physical disc with the game on it. And then we'd hear from him maybe 4 months later about what he thought of the game.
Yeah, months later.
And we try to remember.
Okay, so your girlfriend Emily gets the first voicemail, and then you think it was the parents?
I don't think the parents did at this point. I think Emily
and I should
came
say your parents since you're brothers. I can say
yeah, we
your
have the
parents,
same parents.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So she comes with the voicemail to your parents.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I wasn't living there at the time, but I lived right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So came over as well, and
was she liked by your parents at that time?
Matt and Emily have been together since they were like 12 or
okay,
something.
Okay, so she's family-ish already. Around. Okay.
Her family's our family. It's always been that way.
Good, good.
And I remember immediately when I get there, I think I came straight over from work, or I left work early once someone notified me. And by the time I get there, my parents are already in tears because they went from expected Matt to get home tomorrow.
Right.
To now just assuming he's dead in Africa. Because that's how things work. There's no middle ground.
The greatest Christmas story ever.
Well, our dad is not someone like he is a man of action, I think, and it's really frustrating. Like, what do you do when your son is missing in another, like, there's nothing you can do.
He's an accountant, right? He's numbers and he's very cut and dry and pragmatic, and he probably would like to take care of this and he can't because he's a million miles away. So
You know when you see in the movies where a son dies and then the dad just runs out of the house? like crying out to God or something, running. That's what happened. He's running up and down the street. I'm trying to calm my mom down. Then I got to go out on the street and try to calm my dad down and be like, "Hey, we don't know if he's dead yet."
It'll be fine. Wow, this is a lot to ask of. This is a lot to ask of Josh, Matt. It would have been better if you'd been back, so you.
I felt bad. I said when I was lost, I did feel bad that everyone's probably freaking out at home.
He did say that. Okay,
so I felt bad about it.
It didn't help that this was pre-real internet times.
Yeah.
So we, the news we got,
hard to get information,
was that Matt was lost on an island in Africa. We didn't. We didn't have a world map in our house, or a book, or a way to look at a map.
You couldn't look up when to go to Ireland. And, yeah.
I thought you would have one of those huge globes that opens into a bar.
We had
and you
one.
Could at least look at that.
We had one huge map. We had my sister's shower curtain, which was a world map.
Oh, no.
And
you're
if you know anything about the detail of those maps.
Yeah, they're not exact.
They showed only the island of Madagascar off the coast of Africa and nothing else. And we're like, that's too big.
Yeah, this island isn't listed on that map.
Yeah, well, that island needs to really work on its PR. It needs to be shower curtain ready. So what is the next step? The shower curtain is useless.
Yes.
Oh, you guys are panicked. You're trying to calm your parents.
Everything in Maryland was useless.
Okay.
It was.
Yeah, there's nothing you guys can do.
I believe Emily's parents showed up to kind of calm and support Emily.
Right.
I was trying to support my parents.
Right. Meanwhile, on the island,
Were away at college.
Okay.
I don't think they were around.
So, did you notify them? Did you do the boomer thing of not notifying them? Okay. And so you're back, and this is when you find the volleyball named Wilson, right?
Well, I'll tell you what. I hadn't shaved for 6 months since I've been there. Just
nice.
Because it was complicated. So I
did have an impressive, ladies. Yeah.
Impressive beard. And kind of being gone, you know, I was only lost on the island. You know, I wasn't lost on the island for years, but I did have an impressive 6 month beard.
Yeah,
going
sure.
on. And so I can't get off the island. So I sit back to my, I'm on the edge of the island here where I climbed up.
All right.
And then I just wait. And finally, and I see the sun come up. I know it's past 8 o'clock now. I missed my flight.
Sure.
And then I see a fisherman, a Tanzanian fisherman. He's out there fishing. I have my shirt off. I'm yelling, "Sadie, Sadie," which means help in Swahili. "Sadie." He sees me, gives me a big old smile and wave, and then keeps on going.
Oh, he thought you were just waving.
And then I yelled some, inappropriate words in English after that.
Right.
And then, but I didn't know at the time. He went, there was a motorboat that was looking for me. He had this little sailing boat. He went to go get the motorboat.
Oh, okay. So what
so
you
he was,
thought, you yeah. thought he was just blowing you off.
I thought he was, but he was actually going to get help.
Okay,
and,
good.
And so the motorboat came, and I was able to jump in the water. I swam to the motorboat. They took me back to the back to Dar, and there waiting for me was the ambassador of Tanzania. And that's when I heard about all the terrible stuff that could have happened to me. Like apparently they thought the island was full of puff adder snakes, which could paralyze you.
Yes.
Pirates, I guess, are very common on East Africa's coast. I was ignorant of all of this.
Well, this very rarely happens to the people that are on the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to go into the rocks to get dashed against the rocks for that to happen.
Yeah. And then
so when you get there, all I can picture is, I know you were only gone, maybe 20 hours at most. But I picture you in shredded rags and then the ambassador in like a beautifully tailored suit welcoming you.
Yeah. I mean, it was about 24 hours. We're talking about like 24 hours. So,
okay.
Yeah. He is dressed really nicely. I'm still wet, I guess, because I just jumped in the water and swam.
Right.
I'm still shaking cold.
Yeah.
Both because of just, it's not that cold, but also just because I'm kind of a little bit in shock about this whole kind
of
experience.
Well, of course, and starvation and dehydration. I'm sure you're dealing with everything.
Yeah, and I was, he bought me breakfast, and I got to ask for a cup of hot oatmeal, and I burnt my tongue so badly, Rob,
because
I took one big
bite. Really a bad day.
I took one big bite of that oatmeal, and burned my tongue badly.
Unless you got a splinter, I don't know how the day could have been any worse.
Oh, man. And so anyway, I was able there to talk to my family and Emily and assure them that I was alive and okay.
What was that like? Did you dial Emily directly or your parents directly first?
Oh, that's a great question, Rob. I should know that. The ambassador set it up for me, so he made the calls.
Okay.
I think they were all together maybe. And so they called.
Like a conference call. What was the reaction like? When you heard their voice and they heard your voice finally?
they were obviously relieved. Yeah. I was still in a state, a little bit of disbelief that all this is happening.
Hearing this like, some 15, 18 years later, it's the same way. It's a wild story.
I think on the state side, mm-hmm. I think it was only maybe 6 hours from notification that he was missing to notification he was found.
Well, that's
time change issues. So it's not like we had to go to sleep wondering.
That's what better, but it's still bad. Ugh, I can't imagine. Ugh.
Yeah. So. But that was a good phone call, obviously, to make. And
how are your feet doing at this point?
Yeah, you had all the urchins in them.
Yeah, they're not good. They're not good. They actually, because I walked on them so much, they kind of calloused over.
Right.
So we had to get this special salt that draws out the.
The needles
draws them out, and the needles, and Emily helped me with that after I got back to the States. So they were still in there. I mean, they didn't hurt that bad once.
Lucky
they
her,
over, actually.
But you never battled infection or anything, because that's the big deal with that.
Yeah, no, there was no infection. There was great. Outside of the emotional damage,
emotional. You had emotional MRSA, is what was going on.
Yeah, I remember the week after we got back, we went to the Outer Banks or. Mm-hmm. North Carolina, South Carolina, or Myrtle Beach, I think we went to.
It'd be the Outer Banks.
Yeah, and then going in the ocean, even little waves, just flipping out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't even do it.
PTSD. I totally get that. How long were you in Dar before you were able to get a flight and get back to the States?
We had to stay there for 2 days.
I'm guessing the longest 48 hours of your life.
Yeah. I didn't want to leave my room, to be honest. Just stay in the hotel room because it was painful to walk, and also because
I was room service.
I was scared to get lost or something. Yeah, there's no room service here.
Damn it.
I know. but I felt bad too for my friends, because my friends rearranged all their flights too. Because I also said, hey, Michael, where were you when I was lost on this island? What were you doing, dude?
Yeah, and how is it that they left the island without knowing you were missed, or did they know and that's why they called the search crew?
Yes, that they did call the search crew. Apparently, most of the night, Michael said he was running around the island with other Tanzanians shouting my name, looking for me. But again, it was so loud because I was right next to the waves crashing. Yeah. That even if they were relatively close, I wouldn't be able to hear them. The island is much bigger than I first thought.
Don't you wish you had video of that, of them running around yelling your name? It'd be a great memento of a great day.
Yeah.
So you get back home, and I imagine that when you see Emily and you see your mom and you see your dad and Josh to a lesser extent, and you hug them all, it's got to be the most amazing feeling, but still probably surreal that has all happened in the previous week.
Yeah. No, wow. It is. It's like it's something that you don't – it's unbelievable. And then after the fact, kind of looking back, it quickly becomes – and this is what you never want, Rob. You never want this – to now with this organization, I've been back 4 times. I've taken other people to Tanzania, right. But I always am and will always be that guy who got lost on the island. Like that's my claim to fame now.
This is truly an amazing story. And I guess my takeaway from it is make sure your shower curtain has an accurate map on it. Because if you do, please update them every year. And also, in a much more serious note, I'll say this. My son has just turned 23, and it is to me almost a parallel. He had a job that he loved, that he thought he would love, and he found it unrewarding, and he's just applied for a teaching position because he's been substitute teaching, and he loves the connection with the kids. And he says, hey, this feels like I'm making a difference. And I say, you are, buddy. You really are. And so I understand the calling of being a teacher and why it is so important, but still not sure I would have my feet destroyed.
Well, I recommend to your son a trip to Tanzania and a certain island?
Yeah, well, maybe. Do they have Waze over there? Maybe if we used Waze. Matt Sroka, Merry Christmas. What a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing it. And I will carry it with me for a while. Thank God you're alive. That could have easily gone the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Thank God I'm alive, and thank you for giving me the chance to tell my story.
I love it. And the name of, obviously, you love this organization. What's the name of it again? And do they have a website?
Village Schools International. And yeah, I do love. You can check out their website. It's a great place to kind of donate to. and give money to. I still give money to them. They just do everything the right way. They're just a great organization. I can't say enough good things about them.
Well, I'm so proud to be your friend.
Oh, me too, Rob.
And
right
you know
back
what?
At you.
Speaking of which, Josh, in today's show description, you spelled my name with one B. Ouch.
Ooh. Did I?
Yeah.
Thank you, AI.
Oh, AI did that. Okay, well, I hate AI.
AI is not your friend.
I hate AI, but I love the Stroker brothers. Hope you enjoyed today's story. We return tomorrow with part one of a two-part episode of Rob Radio to provide the soundtrack to your holiday. Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate it. All right.
Thank you.
Talk to you guys tomorrow. So long, folk.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeOMaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.